Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, a show to help frustrated people by taking a positive spin on serious challenges. Today, we're going to be talking about Medicare for All. Really exciting and potentially controversial topic, but I think we're going to make a good go of it. But first, it's National Peanut Brittle Day. And so go ahead and get out there, make yourself a tasty treat. Maybe go to the store and get some peanut brittle. Should be a good day. Today, we have Dr. Eric Halverson, who is a plastic surgeon in Asheville. Welcome, Dr. Halverson, and I want to make sure I got that right. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Thank you, and thank you for having me. So yeah, my name is Eric Halverson. I'm a plastic surgeon here in Asheville. I've been here for about 6 years, but I've been coming to Asheville since mid-1990s when I was in medical school at Duke. I spent the first 10 years of my career in academic practice at UNC Chapel Hill, and up at Harvard working at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And I just kind of burnt out, you know, academic medicine, and just was working too much. And there was a lot of politics involved. And so I was offered an opportunity here in Asheville, and we jumped on it. And it's certainly been a big learning curve, learning how to run a medical practice, a private practice. But we've been very happy here, and it's been great to, you know, bring a lot of things to the community that weren't here before I came.
As we get started, let's talk a little bit about, I know you're active in Medicare for All, what that is in this area, how it works. Is it, you know, is it very organized? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your role with that organization.
Sure. So before I came here, I certainly supported the concept of a single payer system, but starting my own practice and interacting with insurance companies on a daily basis, as opposed to, you know, before it was just handled by the back office. I came to work, I didn't worry about the insurance status of my patients. I just took care of them and that was it. That was really nice. But there is all that stuff that goes on in the background that I wasn't exposed to. And when I became very exposed to it, dealing with it on a daily basis, and it's literally my number one frustration, and it is for most practicing physicians who have any involvement with it. So, you know, it kind of turned me from someone who supports the idea to an activist. And so I made some connections with some local folks, and I was already a member of PNHP, which is Physicians for a National Health Program. And so we started a local chapter. It's called Healthcare for All WNC, but it is a local chapter of PNHP. And there were a couple of local organizations that were much more broadly focused, but did have a little bit of a healthcare arm. And so we kind of got together with those to create one organization. But there are a number of organizations around the state, and then there is a coalition. So it kind of touches all of the regional organizations. And so, yeah, there's a fairly active community of organizations, activists, and it's not just physicians. In fact, right, most of the people are not physicians. Yeah. Tends to be a lot of folks who are retired. There's not a lot of young people involved, and that's the biggest task, I think, for our organizations is really to get young people involved.
My understanding of Medicare for All is do away with your insurance company.
Yeah.
And insurance companies are supposed to do a lot of things. Number one, competition among plans. Number two, a very simple experience. They're supposed to guide you or help you navigate, meaning a consumer, through the healthcare system. They position themselves in a lot of cases as helping you manage your care. There's a network for you. You know, the big argument is, well, the administrative costs with that drive up prices and things like that. But I think it's helpful for folks who are new to Medicare for All really to understand, let's talk about the validity of these arguments that the insurance company wants us all to believe.
Yeah, so the idea that competition amongst insurance plans or insurance companies, and that it will reduce cost and increase quality, I mean, that is a concept that applies to many, many different businesses. You know, we've been trying that in healthcare with insurance companies for many decades. It's not like we've had years or a decade. It's multiple decades. And that experiment has grossly failed. Costs are doing nothing but going up, and quality is going down. So there's something different about the economics of healthcare that you can't just simply you know, copy and paste that concept or model and expect it to work. Patients are not consumers in the same way that consumers of other goods are. We don't shop around. The idea that patients should have skin in the game has been shown study after study after study that it really doesn't lead to lower costs. It leads to patients avoiding care. So yeah, I don't think the idea of competition amongst insurance providers really has helped at all. In fact, it's just gotten worse. And then the idea that insurance companies will help patients navigate their care. I mean, I've never heard a patient tell me that when they called their insurance company, it was a helpful experience. It's nothing but frustration and phone trees and not getting the information you want, or we get a lot. Oh yeah, I called my insurance company. They said, you know, this would be covered. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm looking at your specific plan and it is not covered. And they'll say whatever they need to keep a customer happy, but yeah, they're not, I don't think they're in the game of helping their customers navigate healthcare.
So I can speak to how they are claiming to do that. And it isn't when you call them asking for help. It's when they've gone through your data and picked up perhaps on particular diagnosis codes and they think you need help with something. So then they have a call center that has nurses to call you and help you manage your diabetes. So that's how they describe their helping.
Right. And they're also probably just addressing, they're helping problems that are created by the system we have. And those problems probably wouldn't be there in the same way if we had a completely different system.
I'm just going to cut right into how insurance companies work. They collect a premium, and then their way to make money themselves, to make profit, is to give as little of that back as possible. That's right. Just a simple mathematic equation. I get a dollar. I don't want to give out 90 cents. I want to give out 70. That's the business model. If you get a dollar and you only pay back 70 cents, you get 30 cents. That's your profit. That argument would be like, well, Dr. Halverson, we have to deal with the high cost of care. And we've got people who are aging. We've got people who have chronic conditions, hypertension, heart conditions, diabetes, providers who are driving up prices. So the insurance company goes, we're the middleman. This is not our issue. What do you say to that?
If they're just the middleman, I mean, if you look at the slice of the pie they're taking, it's huge. I mean, their CEOs are making multi-million dollar salaries. And you have to ask yourself, what is an insurance company contributing to healthcare? They're literally contributing nothing to healthcare. What we pay on a monthly basis, you think that's what you pay for your insurance. You also have to look at what is your deductible, what is your co-insurance, and the bottom line number is your out-of-pocket max. If you really need to look at what you're paying every month, add your out-of-pocket max to that, and then divide by 12, and that's what you're actually paying. And those things, the, you know, deductibles, copays, they make it sound like, oh, this, we're giving patients skin in the game here. It's designed to trim costs. It is purely designed to increase profit. Driving prices up, it's because they're trying to make more and more money. So they're trying to charge more and more premiums, trying to pay physicians less, trying to pay hospitals less. And, you know, they want to get bigger and bigger. Hospital chains want to get bigger, bigger. Physician groups are getting bigger, bigger. All this consolidation is not about coordinating care.
I think we've seen that here in Asheville with the HCA taking over the Mission system and then vacuuming up all of the local practices. They have some of the highest reimbursement rates in the country because of their leverage. And the insurance companies don't like that because they've lost their leverage because there's not enough other players in this particular area.
You know, you were asking earlier about what would it look like without insurance companies or the middlemen. I think instead of having a choice of what insurance plan you're going to pick, and that I think is something promoted by politicians, by the companies, is, you know, we want to give you the choice to choose, you know, the power to choose what is right for you and your family. But it's really pulling wool over your eyes because most people aren't choosing their insurance company. It's dictated by their work, and the work will just pick whichever company is giving them the lowest premiums. And then you're handed a dozen or half a dozen different plans to choose from. And you really have to ask yourself, is that the choice you want to be making? I think the choice everybody wants to be making is, I want to choose which doctor I go to. I want to choose which hospital I go to. I've never met anyone who's told me that I really love Blue Cross or I really want Cigna. You know, I have a like brand loyalty and allegiance to this insurance company, or, you know, my $2,500 deductible plan is really like, it's the best. It's the thing I want. And that's the choice that I want out of this whole healthcare thing.
Earlier, you said people don't shop for healthcare that way. Even if you put quality ratings on your website as a plan, you know, what does that really tell me? That doctor might not even be in the network. And then what you're proposing, it sounds a little bit like someone could go out and pick their doctor, compare the doctor, but that's not how they shop. So how do you reconcile that?
Yeah. So, yeah. And you know, there's also this new thing that was passed that hospitals need to be transparent putting prices on their website. Yeah. I think that's just a tiny Band-Aid on a big problem. If you have appendicitis and go to your primary care doctor and they diagnose it, and they're going to refer you to a surgeon, and that surgeon is going to have privileges at a certain hospital. Right. You're not going to then sit there and go, hold on a second. You know, here's my iPad. Right. I'm going to look up these different, you know, surgeons. There's a lot of trust that happens and relationships that are built and established. And that's how patients navigate healthcare systems. You know, having prices on the website of a hospital so patients can compare, that is at best going to have a marginal effect on patient consumers choosing where they go and potentially driving down costs. I think price transparency should be there, but I think they're making it sound like this is a significant move forward when the problem is systemic. It's how the system is set up.
Let's say there is no plan. How does the price get set in the first place? Because those prices are set today by negotiating with a network by a health plan. And so the health plan negotiates with Blue Cross, with Aetna, with Cigna, whoever, and gets the rate that way. How's that going to work in Medicare for All?
Yeah, so it's how much people are billed or pay, or their insurance pays for, I'll just say, a particular procedure. It's fascinating how different it can be. For one example is a particular type of breast reconstruction procedure. It's fairly complicated, a tissue transfer procedure involving microsurgery. It's called a DIEP flap. You could have someone in the same city, a plastic surgeon, getting paid less than $1,000 to do that procedure through Medicaid, for example. At that same hospital, you could have a different surgeon doing out-of-network commercial insurance, getting paid $90,000 for that procedure. It's okay. Insane. And the same is true. All these prices are set by local regional bargaining that and contracts that occur between insurance companies, hospitals. So the same patient at the same hospital having the same procedure, another patient could be paying something completely different just based on their insurance. And hospitals haven't done a good job of creating, well, here's a cash price, you know, because if you call and ask your cash price, they're going to look up your insurance and say, well, you know, you have Blue Cross and this is what we charge Blue Cross. So this is what we're going to charge you. And it makes no sense.
So what's going to happen? Blue Cross would say, well, we negotiate prices with HCA down and we're helping you. They're gone now under Medicare for All. There's no more Blue Cross. There's no more anybody. What's to keep HCA from raising the prices 10%, 20% on any surgery, regardless of Medicare for All? Like, what's Medicare for All going to do to keep HCA from raising
prices? Right. So what happens in that situation is that the CMS essentially establishes the fee schedule across the board for everything. So there's one fee schedule. Now, there are definitely going to be regional differences. If you're a hospital in Manhattan, you're going to be charge more than if you're in Franklin, North Carolina. But that is already at play in Medicare. But I have an app on my phone and I can look up for every procedure code that I do, what is the Medicare reimbursement in Western North Carolina? It makes no sense for me to look at Washington, D.C., but it is different from region to region. And so those prices are just simply set. And, you know, if I do a breast reduction here and another surgeon does a breast reduction there, like we're all getting paid the same thing.
What do you think about those fee schedules, though, for Medicare? Would those work for you? Because they work for an awful lot of people in this country. There's a lot of people on Medicare.
Yeah. So that again goes back to, so you have a lot of primary care physicians who are supporting Medicare for All, because if they look at their contracts, their commercial contracts are essentially straight Medicare contracts. So to them, it's probably not going to affect their bottom line that much. A lot of surgeons, on the other hand, are not supportive of Medicare for All, and it would hurt me financially, to be honest with you. I mean, I have much better contracts with private insurers than I do with Medicare, but it's not like Medicare is offering you nothing. I mean, it's still fairly good compensation. And what I'm seeing now is that commercial insurance plans are, they're shooting themselves in the foot, because they are more and more offering surgeons and subspecialists straight Medicare plans. My practice, for example, I am not in network with United because they offered me a straight Medicare plan. Now, I'm not going to go through all the red tape and headaches of trying to extract payment from an insurance company if they're just going to be paying me the same as Medicare. To get paid from Medicare, it is easy. These other companies, it's just fighting tooth and nail all the time. And so it just, as a matter of principle, I said no. You know, physicians kind of fall. Primary care folks tend to be supportive of it. A lot of subspecialists, surgeons, so forth are not supporting it because it will affect their bottom line. But if you ask anyone, how about for the patient? What do you think would be better for the patient? Pretty much everybody will agree that if everybody had Medicare, it'd be much better for patients.
Medicare can offer a certain rate for a surgery, and then the insurance company can offer a certain rate or reimbursement rate for the same surgery. And you're saying that you were not going to go with what United was saying because it was almost sounds like it was disingenuous. It was, they're offering this to compete with Medicare. They weren't offering it because it was better for the patient. Is that what, yeah. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it increases my overhead. You know, I have a full-time employee who does nothing but dealing with insurance companies. I think every practice would have a smaller back office if we just had a one, you know, because every insurance company, they want you to code slightly differently. The forms are slightly different. Everything's a little bit different. Big difference is Medicare does not have prior authorizations. Right. They have very clear guidelines. You follow the guidelines, you get paid. You don't follow the guidelines, you don't get paid. And with insurance companies, there's this whole prior authorization process that you have to go through. And it's just a lot of time and frustration.
One of the things that I think is, we haven't talked about is the patient's role in this. So yeah. The patient wants everything. The patient wants that breast reconstruction, how they want it, when they want it, maybe optionally, as opposed to something that's required. And the providers want to get paid as much as possible for everything that they do. And the insurance companies want to make as much profit as possible. So they want to pay as little as possible and say, yes, they're going to do it infrequently as possible.
Yeah. And it's what drives me bananas is how the insurance companies will be passive, just sort of sitting there in the background. And they basically make us look bad. Or they will create a situation where a patient is angry with us or frustrated with us. For example, we're doing an elective procedure and they have a very high deductible. We call them, you know, a few weeks ahead of time and say, all right, well, we're gearing up to do this completely elective procedure. And here's your financial responsibility. And then patients get really angry and upset if they can't afford that thing, and then we're canceling surgery. Like, we have to. We are a small business. If I didn't collect up front for that stuff, I would never get paid that stuff. So we just do, and patients get mad at me. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with me. This has to do with you and your contract with your insurance company. And it really has to do with the insurance company and how they've set up structured patients' insurance plans. Most of what plastic surgeons do is elective, but not necessarily cosmetic. I mean, they're plenty of people doing lots of cosmetic surgery. I do cosmetic surgery, but I'm talking about a breast reduction. That's an elective procedure, removing a lipoma or some type of skin lesion or something. They're completely elective. You're not going to die if you don't have that procedure, but it is covered by insurance.
What will consumers be able to do that they can't do today? What benefits of Medicare for All?
Sure. So number one is choice. Your choice changes from choice of a dizzying array of insurance plans that you probably don't really understand to choice of your doctor or hospital. Number two is overall, the cost to the country would be dramatically lower. We're not paying for the profits of a middleman. We're not paying for the insurance companies to pad the pockets of politicians in Washington on both sides of the aisle. to maintain the system. We're not paying for insurance companies to advertise. They fund so-called grassroots organizations that support and propagate concepts, memes, whatever you want to call it, that are supportive of their industry and against Medicare for All. The idea that countries that have a single payer system have death panels, and that no matter what you do, you have these super long waiting lines. And truth is, in our country, the quality of our healthcare is outstanding, probably the best in the world, if you have access to it. If you don't have access to it, then you're out of luck. And if you look at outcomes, healthcare outcomes in our country, they're below every other developed nation and under a lot of underdeveloped nations until you hit 65. And then at 65, it just goes right back and surpasses other countries. And that's because everybody gets their golden ticket when they turn 65. They get access to Medicare. Really, the main advantage is that everyone will be covered. You don't have an insurance card. You just walk into any doctor's office anywhere, any hospital anywhere, you are covered. Right. That's the number one advantage. And number two is, you know, the premiums aren't going to come out of your paycheck and go to an insurance company. The premiums are going to come out as a tax to the government. And that is a big change that a lot of people can't wrap their head around, is that, you know, having it funded through a private for-profit insurance industry versus having it funded through the government. They will do their best to put down what they're calling socialized medicine. This is socialized medicine. It's evil. It's terrible. It's bad. And absolutely, there are some negative things about Medicare for All. There are negative things about the national healthcare system in UK. And, you know, there's no perfect system, right? You know, the pie can only be so big. But I often ask these people, how do you feel about our VA healthcare system that we provide for our veterans? Pretty much, and it's not perfect, but a lot of people think that's something America should be proud of. So the VA healthcare system is a pure socialist medical system. It is owned, financed, and run by the government. Medicare is not socialist medicine. While it is funded by the government, it is completely private. It's privately run. All those great market forces of competition, everything, are at point of care. They're where it matters, between hospitals, between doctors. Like you were talking about, Habanero, you can shop around for, you know, the cheapest MRI. Like, that's good stuff. But having a middleman and then competition happening in that space has not proven to be successful in America. It's been a disaster.
What if the argument is 5% of the population drives 85, whatever, 90% of the costs? If I don't want Medicare for All, I'm saying that you're going to end up subsidizing care for people who are really, really sick. You're paying out of your pocket for those people. What's the argument for those people who say, well, I'm relatively healthy, I'm not sick, I go to my PCP, maybe I've got a couple meds, but generally, I'm not one of those people who's driving up the cost. So why should I have to pay?
I often talk to people about car insurance, so and your home insurance. Like, do you think it's fair that you get into a little fender bender, it's not even your fault, and then next year your premiums go up? Is that okay? Like, no. How insurance is supposed to work is everybody chips in, and then the risk is spread out and payments get spread out. And so it only really works if everybody is in. So in Medicare for All system, it's the same thing. It's like, you don't even have a choice. Like, everybody, 100% Americans are in on this. And so it's funded through taxation. You know, one thing I also bring up is, you know, how about our military? We're really proud of our military, best in the world. How is that funded? It's not funded through private middlemen. It's a government-funded system. How about our policemen? How about our firemen? They are all government-funded. It wasn't always like that. Firemen, I found this when I was researching, we live in a historic house in Asheville, and you look at these old fire department maps from back in the day, and why do they have these maps? Yeah, every company would have a different map of where they were covering homes. And so if you lived in North Asheville and you happened to subscribe to a fire department that was in South Asheville, your house could burn down. And then they did away with that, created a national, you know, government-funded fire department system, and now it makes sense, right? Your house is on fire in South Asheville, and the South Asheville Fire Department shows up. So I don't know. We don't seem to have a problem with government funding our military, our police department, our fire departments, the Coast Guard, all that stuff, all things that have to do with our security. Healthcare, I think, is just as important and vital as security. So I'm not sure why everybody has such a big problem with it being funded through taxation.
So how would you feel about becoming a government employee on a government pay scale for whatever they decided was the pay for a plastic surgeon?
You know, I have colleagues, friends in Canada who are plastic surgeons. They're very happy. They get paid very well. They have no, I mean, they have frustrations with their system. And I think we should talk about what are the negative aspects of the system. So, you know, in our country, we like to think that healthcare is a right, but it's really a privilege how it's set up. And so the pie or healthcare is distributed according to ability to pay for the most part. Now up there, it's not distributed according to ability to pay because everybody has it. So the pie is still, it's a fixed pie, right? So you have to distribute according to something else, and it's according to need. So an arthritic knee and want a knee replacement, yeah, you're probably going to be waiting 3, 4, 5, 6 months. You're having a heart attack and need open heart surgery, it's going to happen that day. So that it's just a different thing. So yeah, there are definitely longer waits for elective procedures in Canada versus here.
Well, the other thing that I think happens is what's important to me or what I think is urgent or I need to have right away might not be the same thing that my grandmother or my neighbor next door might think. So I think there's a lot of subjectivity that comes into that. And I pay taxes. I need to have this right now.
Right. And I think, you know, there will be built into that system people who are offering private cash services. You know, I mean, this is America, right? So people who make tons of money and want their knee replacement right now, they're certainly going to have access to that. But I think it's just important to have as a uniform thing for every American, children, adults, to have at least basic healthcare access, which we don't have now. And it ends up driving up costs because then, you know, someone ends up in the emergency room with a really serious condition and they don't have insurance and everybody eats like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that, you know, could have been prevented.
Sounds to me like really what you're saying is the reason Medicare for All works is that healthcare is a public good. Mm-hmm. And that Americans already buy into public goods through police departments, through fire departments, through a ton of other things. Habanero pointed out that to make that work means doctors are going to be willing to have to take a pay cut. And it seems like there's a large enough community of physicians who would do that. And I think we all understand that a lot of heart surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, and plastic surgeons may not want that. But that's the way America works. There's, right?
It's been actually studied. I think for the majority of physicians, there may not be a pay cut. In fact, there are some arguments that their overall reimbursement might go up because of savings and overhead. Me personally, I would take a cut. You know, my friends who are ENT surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, they would end up taking a cut.
That if we believe it's a public good, Medicare for All makes sense. Because if we broke down the conversation earlier and the fee schedule is straight Medicare, and even insurance companies want to adopt the straight Medicare schedule, it seems like that path makes the most sense. Why would you pay United, for example, for insurance when the price is going to be the same through Medicare for All without a lot of the other overhead that you'd be paying for? And so
less actually, you'll be paying less in your taxes to healthcare than you do through your employer. And also I think people really, we take it for granted that our healthcare comes through our employers. That's just a weird quirk of how things have turned out in the United States, going back to the 50s where people were just started offering it as a benefit through work. But you have to ask yourself, does that make sense? And from a purely business perspective, our U.S. corporations are at a competitive disadvantage to companies in Europe and other countries because so much of your payroll is going to an insurance company.
A lot of that has been pushed back to the employees.
And it just makes no sense. Like, why is my healthcare tied to my employer? And then I switch jobs and my insurance plan changes. That makes no sense. Or 3 months I'm without a job and then I don't have insurance. Like, that could be when you're most vulnerable.
There's an argument to be made the way that insurance is set up through your employer actually hinders innovation because it keeps people in jobs they don't want.
Right.
And that's a problem because I've talked to people and it's like, well, I can't leave because of the benefits. And someone in my family needs those benefits. It doesn't have to be them. It could be a child. It could be a spouse or whatever. If you don't have the opportunity, take risks or to take advantage of the opportunities, the American way kind of goes away. If we view the police as a public good and fire as a public good, and we view healthcare as a public good, doesn't that really help all of the country? Isn't that much more American because it gives people opportunities
yes.
than it is to say socialized medicine?
Right.
What is that where we're going?
Yeah. I mean, I think people just have to shift their focus. It really obsessed me that it becomes sort of this politically divisive issue. And to me, it's a human rights issue. It's very pro-American, but it has become, if you decide that you're Republican, you have to check these boxes and the healthcare box has to be, you know, checked a certain way. It really shouldn't be that way. It is really a public good. And it's good for everyone in the country and it would save us a lot of money. One other thing I want to point out is that the majority of financial bankruptcies in the United States are from healthcare debt. The majority of those people have health insurance. We are the only country that has GoFundMe platforms for people trying to pay their bills. Patients who are suffering cancer, trauma, they are asking their friends for money so they can hand checks to an insurance company. It's ludicrous. So I think things people can do, number one, there's you can Google Fix It Healthcare. It's a documentary. There's two versions, like a 10-minute version and a 40-minute version. It just spells all this stuff out. And it's not left or right on the political spectrum. It's a pretty just evidence-based discussion of what's the data, what are the facts. It's actually very much from a business perspective, arguing that a single-payer system will help American businesses, especially small right. businesses. And I think it's just a great place to start for people to educate themselves more about the dysfunction in our system and how much money is just getting skimmed off the top that is doing nothing for us. And the other thing is, you know, you can get active with any regional or local organization that's involved in healthcare for all, but also just, you know, through your congressman, your senator, you know, these people have staff that are just taking phone calls and emails and letters from constituents all day long. And I don't think Americans do that enough to call up your local congressman and say, hey, you know, where do you stand on this? And this is why I believe in what I believe, because it's going to take, I mean, I think eventually we're going to have to go to a single payer system. And I think by the time we get there, our system's going to be so broken and bankrupted that it's probably not going to be as good as the Canadian system. But that's only going to happen when it gets to a tipping point and the American public realizes how they've been taken for a ride for the last 50 years, sway politicians to do the right thing. Because, you know, the insurance company, part of our premiums goes to insurance companies funding politicians.
Dr. Halverson, I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you very much. You guys have a great day.
Thank you for having me.